The Great Chapter, Part 2, translated by Bhikkhu Sajjato. At Sarpuga. At one time, Venerable Ananda was staying in the land of the Kolians, where they have a town named Sarpuga. Then several Kolians from Sarpuga went up to Ananda, bowed and sat down to one side. Then Venerable Ananda said to them, Bhayagapajas, these four factors of trying to be pure have been rightly explained by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, the Perfected One, the fully awakened Buddha. They are in order to purify sentient beings, to get past sorrow and crying, to make an end of pain and sadness, to end the cycle of suffering, and to realize extinguishment. What for? The factors of trying to be pure in ethics, mind, view, and freedom. And what is the factor of trying to be pure in ethics? It's when a mendicant is ethical, restrained in the code of conduct, with good behavior and supporters. Seeing danger in the slightest fault, they keep the rules they've undertaken. This is called purity of ethics. They think, I will fulfill such purity of ethics, or, if it's already fulfilled, I'll support it in every situation by wisdom. Their enthusiasm for that, their effort, zeal, vigour, perseverance, mindfulness, and situational awareness is called the factor of trying to be pure in ethics. And what is the factor of trying to be pure in mind? It's when a mendicant, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskillful qualities, enters and remains in the first absorption, second absorption, third absorption, fourth absorption. This is called purity of mind. They think, I will fulfill such purity of mind, or, if it's already fulfilled, I'll support it in every situation by wisdom. Their enthusiasm for that, their effort, zeal, vigour, perseverance, mindfulness, and situational awareness is called the factor of trying to be pure in mind. And what is the factor of trying to be pure in view? Take a mendicant who truly understands this is suffering, this is the origin of suffering, this is the cessation of suffering, this is the practice that leads to the cessation of suffering. This is called purity of view. They think, I will fulfill such purity of view, or, if it's already fulfilled, I'll support it in every situation by wisdom. Their enthusiasm for that, their effort, zeal, vigour, perseverance, mindfulness, and situational awareness is called the factor of trying to be pure in view. And what is the factor of trying to be pure in freedom? That noble disciple who has these factors of trying to be pure in ethics, mind, and view detaches their mind from things that arouse greed and frees their mind from things that it should be freed from. Doing so, they experience perfect freedom. This is called purity of freedom. They think, I will fulfill such purity of freedom, or, if it's already fulfilled, I'll support it in every situation by wisdom. Their enthusiasm for that, their effort, zeal, vigour, perseverance, mindfulness, and situational awareness is called the factor of trying to be pure in freedom. These four factors of trying to be pure have been rightly explained by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, the Perfected One, the fully awakened Buddha. They are in order to purify sentient beings, to get past sorrow and crying, to make an end of pain and sadness, to end the cycle of suffering, and to realize extinguishment. With Wappa. At one time, the Buddha was staying in the land of the Sakyans near Kapalavattu in the Banyan Tree Monastery. Then Wappa of the Sakyans, a disciple of the Jains, went up to Venerable Maha Moggallana, bowed and sat down to one side. Maha Moggallana said to him, Wappa, take a person who is restrained in body, speech, and mind. When ignorance fades away and knowledge arises, do you see any reason why defilements giving rise to painful feelings would defile that person in the next life? Sir, I do see such a case. Take a person who did bad deeds in a past life, but the result of that has not yet ripened. For this reason, defilements giving rise to painful feelings would defile that person in the next life. But this conversation between Maha Moggallana and Wappa was left unfinished. Then, in the late afternoon, the Buddha came out of retreat and went to the assembly hall. He sat down on the seat spread out and said to Maha Moggallana, "Moggallana, what were you talking about just now? What conversation was unfinished?" Moggallana repeated the entire conversation to the Buddha and concluded, "This was my conversation with Wappa that was unfinished when the Buddha arrived." Then the Buddha said to Wappa, "Wappa, we can discuss this, but only if you allow what should be allowed and reject what should be rejected. And if you ask me the meaning of anything you don't understand, saying, 'Sir, why is this? What's the meaning of that?' 'Sir, let us discuss this. I will do as you say.' What do you think, Wappa? There are distressing and feverish defilements that arise because of instigating bodily activity. These don't occur in someone who avoids such bodily activity. They don't perform any new deeds, and old deeds are eliminated by experiencing their results little by little. This wearing away is visible in this very life, immediately effective, inviting inspection, relevant, so that sensible people can know it for themselves. Do you see any reason why defilements giving rise to painful feelings would defile that person in the next life?" "No, sir." "What do you think, Wappa? There are distressing and feverish defilements that arise because of instigating verbal activity. These don't occur in someone who avoids such verbal activity. They don't perform any new deeds, and old deeds are eliminated by experiencing their results little by little. This wearing away is visible in this very life, immediately effective, inviting inspection, relevant, so that sensible people can know it for themselves. Do you see any reason why defilements giving rise to painful feelings would defile that person in the next life?" "No, sir." "What do you think, Wappa? There are distressing and feverish defilements that arise because of instigating mental activity. These don't occur in someone who avoids such mental activity. They don't perform any new deeds, and old deeds are eliminated by experiencing their results little by little. This wearing away is visible in this very life, immediately effective, inviting inspection, relevant, so that sensible people can know it for themselves. Do you see any reason why defilements giving rise to painful feelings would defile that person in the next life?" "No, sir." "What do you think, Wappa? There are distressing and feverish defilements that arise because of ignorance. These don't occur when ignorance fades away and knowledge arises. They don't perform any new deeds, and old deeds are eliminated by experiencing their results little by little. This wearing away is visible in this very life, immediately effective, inviting inspection, relevant, so that sensible people can know it for themselves. Do you see any reason why defilements giving rise to painful feelings would defile that person in the next life?" "No, sir." "A mendicant whose mind is rightly freed like this has achieved 6 consistent responses. Seeing a sight with the eye, they're neither happy nor sad, but remain equanimous, mindful, and aware. Hearing a sound with the ears, they're neither happy nor sad, but remain equanimous, mindful, and aware. Smelling an odour with the nose, they're neither happy nor sad, but remain equanimous, mindful, and aware. Tasting a flavour with the tongue, they're neither happy nor sad, but remain equanimous, mindful, and aware. Feeling a touch with the body, they're neither happy nor sad, but remain equanimous, mindful, and aware. Knowing a thought with the mind, they're neither happy nor sad, but remain equanimous, mindful, and aware. Feeling the end of the body approaching, they understand, 'I feel the end of the body approaching.' Feeling the end of life approaching, they understand, 'I feel the end of life approaching.' They understand, 'When my body breaks up and my life has come to an end, everything that's felt, being no longer relished, will become cool right there. Suppose there was a shadow cast by a sacrificial post. Then along comes a person with a spade and basket. They cut down the sacrificial post at its base, dig it up, and pull it out by its roots, right down to the fibres and stems. Then they split it apart, cut up the parts, and chop them into splinters. Next, they dry the splinters in the wind and sun, burn them with fire, and reduce them to ashes. Then they sweep away the ashes in a strong wind, or float them away down a swift stream. And so the shadow cast by the post is cut off at the root, made like a palm stump, obliterated, and unable to arise in the future. In the same way, a mendicant whose mind is rightly freed like this has achieved 6 consistent responses. Seeing a sight with the eye, they're neither happy nor sad, but remain equanimous, mindful and aware. Hearing a sound with the ears, they're neither happy nor sad, but remain equanimous, mindful and aware. Smelling an odour with the nose, they're neither happy nor sad, but remain equanimous, mindful and aware. Tasting a flavour with the tongue, they're neither happy nor sad, but remain equanimous, mindful and aware. Feeling a touch with the body, they're neither happy nor sad, but remain equanimous, mindful and aware. Knowing a thought with the mind, they're neither happy nor sad, but remain equanimous, mindful and aware. Feeling the end of the body approaching, they understand, I feel the end of the body approaching. Feeling the end of life approaching, they understand, I feel the end of life approaching. They understand, when my body breaks up and my life has come to an end, everything that's felt, being no longer relished, will become cool right here. When he said this, Wappa the Sakyan, the disciple of the Jains, said to the Buddha, Sir, suppose there was a man who raised commercial horses for profit, but he never made any profit, and instead just got weary and frustrated. In the same way, I paid homage to those Jain fools for profit, but I never made any profit, and instead just got weary and frustrated. From this day forth, any confidence I had in those Jain fools, I sweep away as in a strong wind, or float away as down a swift stream. Excellent, sir. From this day forth, may the Buddha remember me as a lay follower who has gone for refuge for life. With Salha. At one time, the Buddha was staying near Visali at the Great Wood, in the hall with the peaked roof. Then Salha and Abhaya, the Lichavis, went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side and said to him, There are, sir, some ascetics and Brahmins who advocate crossing the flood by means of 2 things, purification of ethics and mortification in disgust of sin. What does the Buddha say about this? Salha, purification of ethics is one of the factors of the ascetic life, I say. But those ascetics and Brahmins who teach mortification in disgust of sin, regarding it as essential and clinging to it, are incapable of crossing the flood. And those ascetics and Brahmins whose livelihood and behaviour by way of body, speech and mind is not pure, are also incapable of knowing and seeing, of supreme awakening. Suppose a man who wanted to cross a river took a sharp axe into a wood. There he'd see a large green sal tree, straight and young and grown free of defects. He'd cut it down at the base, cut off the top, and completely strip off the branches and foliage. Then he'd trim it with axes and machetes, plane it and sand it with a rock. Finally, he'd launch out on the river. What do you think, Salha? Is that man capable of crossing the river? No, sir. Why not? Because that green sal tree is well worked on the outside, but inside it's still not cleared out. I'd expect that green sal tree to sink and the man to come to ruin. In the same way, Salha, those ascetics and Brahmins who teach mortification in disgust of sin, regarding it as essential and clinging to it, are incapable of crossing the flood. And those ascetics and Brahmins whose livelihood and behaviour by way of body, speech and mind is not pure are also incapable of knowing and seeing, of supreme awakening. But those ascetics and Brahmins who don't teach mortification in disgust of sin, not regarding it as essential or clinging to it, are capable of crossing the flood. And those ascetics and Brahmins whose behaviour by way of body, speech and mind is pure are also capable of knowing and seeing, of supreme awakening. Suppose a man who wanted to cross a river took a sharp axe into a wood. There he'd see a large green sal tree, straight and young, and grown free of defects. He'd cut it down at the base, cut off the top, and completely strip off the branches and foliage. Then he'd trim it with axes and machetes. Then he'd take a chisel and completely clear it out inside. Then he'd plane it, sand it with a rock, and make it into a boat. Finally, he'd fix it with oars and rudder and launch out on the river. What do you think, Salha? Is that man capable of crossing the river? Yes, sir. Why is that? Because that green sal tree is well worked on the outside, cleared out on the inside, made into a boat, and fixed with oars and rudder. I'd expect that boat to not sink, and the man to safely make it to the far shore. In the same way, Salha, those ascetics and Brahmins who don't teach mortification in disgust of sin, not regarding it as essential or clinging to it, are capable of crossing the flood. And those ascetics and Brahmins whose behaviour by way of body, speech and mind is pure, are also capable of knowing and seeing, of supreme awakening. Suppose there was a warrior who knew lots of fancy archery tricks. It's only with these three factors that he becomes worthy of a king, fit to serve a king, and is considered a factor of kingship. What three? He's a long-distance shooter, a marksman, and one who shatters large objects. Just as a warrior is a long-distance shooter, a noble disciple has right immersion. A noble disciple with right immersion truly sees any kind of form at all, past, future, or present, internal or external, coarse or fine, inferior or superior, far or near, all form, with right understanding, this is not mine, I am not this, this is not myself. They truly see any kind of feeling at all, past, future, or present, internal or external, coarse or fine, inferior or superior, far or near, all feeling with right understanding. This is not mine, I am not this, this is not myself. They truly see any kind of perception at all, past, future or present, internal or external, coarse or fine, inferior or superior, far or near, all perception with right understanding. This is not mine, I am not this, this is not myself. They truly see any kind of choices at all, past, future or present, internal or external, coarse or fine, inferior or superior, far or near, all choices with right understanding. This is not mine, I am not this, this is not myself. They truly see any kind of consciousness at all, past, future or present, internal or external, coarse or fine, inferior or superior, far or near, all consciousness with right understanding, this is not mine, I am not this, this is not myself. Just as a warrior is a marksman, a noble disciple has right view. A noble disciple with right view truly understands, this is suffering, this is the origin of suffering, this is the cessation of suffering. This is the practice that leads to the cessation of suffering. Just as a warrior shatters large objects, a noble disciple has right freedom. A noble disciple with right freedom shatters the great mass of ignorance. Queen Malika. At one time the Buddha was staying near Sarvati in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's monastery. Then Queen Malika went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side and said to him, "What is the cause, sir? What is the reason why in this life some females are ugly, unattractive and bad-looking, and poor, with few assets and possessions, and insignificant? And why are some females ugly, unattractive and bad-looking, but rich, affluent, wealthy and illustrious? And why are some females attractive, good-looking, lovely, of surpassing beauty, but poor, with few assets and possessions, and insignificant? And why are some females attractive, good-looking, lovely, of surpassing beauty, and rich, affluent, wealthy, and illustrious? Take a female who is irritable and bad-tempered. Even when criticized a little bit, she loses her temper, becoming annoyed, hostile, and hard-hearted, and displaying annoyance, hate, and bitterness. She doesn't give to ascetics or Brahmins such things as food, drink, clothing, vehicles, garlands, fragrance and makeup, and bed, house and lighting. And she's jealous, envying, resenting and begrudging the possessions, honour, respect, reverence, homage and veneration given to others. If she comes back to this state of existence after passing away, wherever she is reborn, she's ugly, unattractive and bad-looking, and poor, with few assets and possessions, and insignificant. Take another female who is irritable and bad-tempered, but she does give to ascetics and Brahmins, and she's not jealous. If she comes back to this state of existence after passing away, wherever she is reborn, she's ugly, unattractive and bad-looking, but rich, affluent, wealthy and illustrious. Take another female who isn't irritable and bad-tempered, but she doesn't give to ascetics or Brahmins, and she's jealous. If she comes back to this state of existence after passing away, wherever she is reborn, she's attractive, good-looking, lovely, of surpassing beauty, but poor, with few assets and possessions, and insignificant. Take another female who isn't irritable and bad-tempered. She gives to ascetics and Brahmins, and she's not jealous. If she comes back to this state of existence after passing away, wherever she is reborn, she's attractive, good-looking, lovely, of surpassing beauty, and rich, affluent, wealthy, and illustrious. This is why some females are ugly and poor and insignificant, and some females are ugly but rich and illustrious, and some females are attractive but poor and insignificant, and some females are attractive and rich and illustrious. When this was said, Queen Malikar said to the Buddha, "Sir, in another life I must have been irritable and bad-tempered. Even when lightly criticized, I must have lost my temper, becoming annoyed, hostile and hard-hearted, and displaying annoyance, hate and bitterness. For now I am ugly, unattractive and bad-looking. In another life I must have given to ascetics or Brahmins such things as food, drink, clothing, vehicles, garlands, fragrance and makeup, and bed, house and lighting. For now I am rich, affluent and wealthy. In another life I must not have been jealous, envying, resenting and begrudging the possessions, honour, respect, reverence, homage and veneration given to others. For now I am illustrious. In this royal court I command maidens of the aristocrats, Brahmins and householders. So, sir, from this day forth I will not be irritable and bad-tempered. Even when heavily criticized, I won't lose my temper, become annoyed, hostile and hard-hearted, or display annoyance, hate and bitterness. I will give to ascetics or Brahmins such things as food, drink, clothing, vehicles, garlands, fragrance and makeup, and bed, house and lighting. I will not be jealous, envying, resenting and begrudging the possessions, honour, respect, reverence, homage and veneration given to others. Excellent sir, from this day forth, may the Buddha remember me as a lay follower who has gone for refuge for life."